This is the July 28 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Merrill Crowley at AgTraderTalk.com out of Watseka, Illinois, Aaron Curtis from MidCog.com in Bloomington, Illinois, and Ellen Dearden of AgReview in Morton, Illinois. We're joined by a special guest today. Scott Kirkwood is here from CHSHighPlains.com. And he's way out west in Nebraska and Colorado. We'll let you tell us exactly where in just a moment. Let's get a series of items that we ought to talk about, actually, from each of you. Scott, exactly where are you located, by the way?
We are located out in northeast Colorado and western Nebraska. We have 20 grain locations, which would include two shuttle loaders. We have licensed storage capacity of 33.8 million bushels, variety of crops, hard red winter wheat, hard white wheat, corn, and white proso millet. In addition to that, we do have agronomy and energy.
And what questions would you like to address for the day? What should we talk about?
I guess, Todd, you know, primarily is our crop conditions out here. Of course, if I've seen them in my 22 years out here, and that's probably the hottest topic out in our neck of the woods.
All right, we'll get back to those. Merrill Crowley, what's on your list of items that we should discuss for the day?
Well, it is a weather market. We're seeing a rebound based mostly on that, I would say. But prior to that, we had concerns about the recession pushing the market down. Maybe we could discuss which one might win, or if it does win, what we could see.
Aaron Curtis from Midco, items from you.
Yeah, always looking at demand and what that looks like here. Brazil's been shipping quite a few beans here as we ended late summer, got some needs to cover. The China does for September. Does the U.S. play into that or not? And, you know, what does corn export demand look like as we talk about a grain corridor possibility? It looks like a big South American crop again next year. And, you know, where does the U.S. fit in on that in terms of exports here as we go through the next 6 to 9 months?
And Ellen Dearden.
Well, it seems to me that the market was pushed down during the month of July pretty easily by funds pulling out of long positions, particularly in the grains. And my question is, will they come back in this market and will they come back in hard?
Interesting. I'd like you to talk a little bit about that to begin with. Do you think that the funds will be back into the marketplace? And if so, in which direction?
Well, historically, they have not been big players in this late summertime period unless we have a drought underway. And of course, Scott just outlined a drought situation in his neck of the woods. But when you're in green Illinois or green Iowa, it's hard to be talking drought, and those two are the biggest corn states. Those two represent 31% of the U.S. corn crop, those two states, and they are pretty darn green. So my guess is that fund money will remain pretty well sidelined here. They may come in because technically we've seen buy signals in both corn and beans this week, but I don't think they're going to come in with a vengeance.
Merrill Crowley, have you been thinking about that managed money and where it might go?
Well, I didn't think about managed money so much as, and a lot of that was talked about because they ran out because of concerns about recession. And you look at the fuel markets, you have the same thing happening there. We broke $100 in the fuel market and haven't been able so far to regain that. And we have a very tight situation in the oil market that doesn't look to be going away. And that... But the only explanation right now I can come up with is the fact that the concerns of recession, which slows the economy and reduces the demand for oil. The only other explanation is we have demand destruction for oil. Now, I did go back and look at July lows. There's seven of them going back to 1969. So that's 50-some years. Two of them went ahead and one rallied in... 2003, it went from 205 to 335, which is a 64% increase, and it rallied clear into 4.8 of 24. Then the other one was in 07, and it rallied clear over into June of 08, and that rally was 148%. So if the weather does get bad enough and the economy stays, say, so-so, we could see some pretty significant rallies. The other rallies I have basically ended anywhere in the month of July to clear out to October of the same year. The largest increase or rally in that was about 32%, which would be a pretty healthy rally if we had that today.
Aaron Curtis, this week, I'll stay with kind of this money movement area, potential of a recession, that by the numbers, factually, we have now begun to enter. I'm wondering if this three-quarter point raise, the second one the Federal Reserve has put in place, makes much of a difference to you from the elevator perspective.
Well, I think, just in terms of market, I think it was kind of hamstrung the market here, waiting to see what the Fed would do, make sure there was no surprises versus what was expected. They came out pretty much as expected. And, you know, we've seen the stock market bounce just a little bit once that announcement was made there Wednesday after yesterday. And then now we kind of dissect what the comments are going to be for the next stage of that. I think if you look at some of the futures markets, they're pricing in another 0.75% increase in interest rate here by the end of the year. So expectation is continuing to see interest rates increase a little bit. And a lot of the discussion, you know, over the next few months is going to be, you know, what kind of landing does this economy have? Is it going to be soft or hard? So, you know, that's going to play into commodity markets just a little bit, because how it may influence demand moving forward. And we've seen for most of the summer, right, the funds have been paying pretty close attention to what's going on in the energy markets. The dollar has rallied into new, you know, 20-year highs, and that took a little bit of the edge off commodity markets as well. So we can't sleep on what's going on in those so-called outside markets. But, you know, from a grain position, right, just in terms of a hedge position, obviously from the elevator standpoint, there's borrowing costs that are needed to maintain hedge positions and maintain inventory. So anytime those costs are going up, right, it puts a little more stress, might not be the right word, but just a little more cost, right, in maintaining hedges and maintaining inventory. So increases cost from the elevator side. And, you know, in a fairly small margin business, right, those costs are things that got to be carefully managed.
Can I jump in there, Todd, and say that cost of carrying grain should be going up with higher interest rates, particularly if we get another 0.75-point rise by the end of the year, which I believe we will. The other thing is, I think it's going to force more fall sales of corn and soybeans in this particular area, with hopes of buying fertilizer and paying for fertilizer in calendar year 2022.
So your thought is simply that they'll need the money.
They'll need the money, and they'll forego looking for much carrying charge in the futures market, because we're not really showing much right now.
Scott Kirkwood from CHS High Plains, you wanted to talk about the condition of your crop here in Illinois, or the part of the world that we are all in. Things are not bad. I would guess that, Merrill, we might need to come back to you to get a better look at what's happening in your area near Watsika. But Scott, where you are has been clearly burning up. Now, you're outside of the Corn Belt, relatively speaking, and we don't pay a lot of attention to what happens there, but we do discuss it from time to time, and this is one of those times. Can you tell me about conditions in that far western part of Nebraska, the eastern part of Colorado?
Sure. You know, just a little background. I mean, we're a corn deficit market out here anyway. We have a lot of end users, cattle feeding operations, large cattle feeding operations, ethanol, of course. And, you know, this has just been a terrible, terrible. I mean, we were dry this winter with no snow to speak of, and, you know, just very little moisture. I looked just yesterday, and in our particular area where I live, we've had 10 inches of rain this year. So It's been extremely dry. You know, we had 40% of a normal wheat crop Our corn crop, you know, we're probably 50% dry land corn and 50% irrigated corn. Other people on the panel have touched on it. You know, you talk energy costs, transportation costs, you know, that really is going to impact our area being corn deficit. We could potentially be looking at bringing in Illinois corn, for example, or Eastern Corn Belt corn into our area to satisfy our local demand, given that we don't see any demand destruction between now and next year. So we are going to see cash markets be as firm as probably as I have ever seen them in my 22 years out here.
Ellen Dearden, do you have a question you'd like to ask of Scott?
Yeah, it's kind of hard for us, Scott, to talk about 10 inches of moisture so far this year when we don't know your normal amount. And I'd like to know what kind of corn basis you typically have in August and what you expect to have this fall.
I would say right now our corn basis is probably 75 cents to a dollar and a quarter higher than normal, depending on where you're at. Our corn basis, I expect our new crop corn basis probably to be as high as I've ever seen it. We went into a situation where I think our pipeline is going to be pretty much drained. The farmer and the commercial elevator, I mean, we were inverted markets, so we did what the market was telling us to do, which was to sell corn into this thing. And so I would say we're going to see our normal corn basis out here is maybe 20 under. Right now we're 20 cents better than normal, and depending on what happens, that could be significantly higher by the time we get to corn harvest.
Can you tell me on your storage, do you have much in storage now, or are you pretty empty?
We are all but out of open store corn.
How about wheat?
You know, we just finished our wheat harvest. Like I said, we were probably 40% of a normal crop. You know, the farmer is filling his contracts of the contracted grains that he had, and, you know, we're working through that. But, no, we'll have very little open store probably when we get done here in the next 45 days, I guess.
Aaron, do you have a question?
Yes, Scott. What makes up your corn demand in your part of the world? Is it feedlots, ethanol, and then, you know, you said your corn deficit. Where does mostly your corn flow from to fill that deficit throughout a year?
Here locally, like in the Yuma, Colorado area, lots of big feed yards. If you move west along the Front Range of Colorado, there's ethanol and large feedlots up there. That deficit a lot of times will be fed from western Nebraska. You know, most of the grain out here will flow from east to west or from north to south to feed the feed yards either in southwest Kansas or southeast Colorado.
Merrill, you have a question?
I was curious what other feedstuffs you had out there, sorghum, milo.
Yeah.
Well, the shortage of corn.
There's not much milo fed out here. In the last several years, there has been more milo acres put in. Most of it would be under dry land, and with our current drought out here, you know, that crop's going to suffer as well.
Where do your shuttle loaders go to? Do you ship all the way into California, or is it stop at the range, Front Range, and simply mostly hit the feedlots?
Our shuttle loaders, when we do have an abundance of corn, and that has happened, Our corn shuttles went to California, Hereford, Texas, trains to Mexico. This year, of course, won't be one of those years that we will do that. We'll probably be looking at bringing corn shuttles in rather than shipping them out.
And you have the ability to unload, or that they'll go directly to the feedlots?
No, we have the ability to unload them.
So you'll be a way station for the corn coming in.
Yep.
Good to know.
Yep.
So in the 22 years that you have been in this business, I think all of them there, how has the crop mix changed? I mean, have you developed more corn acres?
We have. over the years, I mean, we were primarily a lot of wheat that was raised here, but because of the technological advances in corn seed, better yields than wheat, it just pencils better. So over the years, yes, we've had increased corn acres.
And because so much is under irrigation, there's a difference there. I believe RMA has to be involved maybe with some of the crop insurance decisions related to allocations of water, turning maybe parts of irrigation systems on and off. Are we to that point where water allocation is an issue for you?
I do not know if it has happened yet. I know in different years it has, so it would not surprise me if we're not there, we could be very close in certain spots.
And I want you to repeat one thing for me because it really surprised me. You're normally 20 under?
Yes.
That's a good basis.
There's a reason why it's 20 under and not 40 or 50 is in some parts.
It's because your corn deficit, I understand, but yes.
Yeah, and like I said, we have a lot of local demand.
All right, let's turn our attention back to the Midwest. I want to talk about a couple of other things that we're worried about. Export demand, I'll start with you, Aaron Curtis, on this. For corn, as it relates to the grain corridor issues in Ukraine and Russia, and potentially, I suppose, the third corn crop coming out of Brazil still.
Yeah, so I think you got to go back to, you know, the end of February when the war first started, right? The anticipation was that a lot of business going to move back to the United States and just hasn't verified to this point, right? Continuing to see Ukraine leak out a little bit of corn each month, and the hope is that'll continue to grow here as they work on this new export corridor. I know there's plenty of doubt on that here moving forward, but the hope is still there that that'll continue to increase. You know, the crop in South in Brazil, particularly, right, as they continue to move through the end of harvest and move into ports and right and continuing to be at this point anyway, both Brazil and Argentina pricing below the U.S. in terms of export demand. So at least on the old crop side, continuing to be you know, a pretty slow program overall. The question is going to be, what does it look like this fall? We assume Brazil is going to have a little bit of a long tail to it as they continue to move through their harvest, which will probably take up some of the global interest here, at least in our part of the world, into the early part of fall. But I think assuming that, you know, this export corridor doesn't return back to what it was prior to the war, there's an opportunity for the U.S. to participate more in exports here in this January, February, March time frame. So that might be an opportunity for us to feast a little bit in terms of corn exports. You know, Brazil and China continue to talk about putting an agreement together to try to increase exports there, you know, based on some phytosanitary requirements and even some talk that they may try to push that up even into sometime this fall. So we'll see how that plays out. But Brazil obviously interested in supplying China some more corn in 2023, helping to make up from some of that corn that typically flows out of the Ukraine. So, you know, obviously some political things could impact U.S. corn export demand here moving forward. But right now, at least for the next short term, it looks like it's going to kind of continue to underperform expectations from what we thought here 3 to 4 months ago.
On the flip side, soybean, Ellen Dearden, the export market normally would begin to pick up soon for exports of soybeans from the United States, harvest time, meaning soon. Are the expectations that China will take very many of our soybeans this year?
Well, my expectations are that they will, but China put out an announcement this week. Number one, they've got another auction of their own stocks into the market, but they've also put out that they've got a big bean crop coming. Now, I think that's just a positioning statement, and I don't expect that to be the case. We've got to see beans moving out of the Dakotas. We've got to see those going to the Northwest. However, who knows what the situation is going to be like on the Mississippi River. Certainly the lower Mississippi is full of water and full of water in the soils and probably seeing a little bit of a late harvest there. But I'm not sure with a huge range that we saw this week in the St. Louis, Memphis area, whether that's got the Mississippi, you know, in a mess right now. It's difficult to see an export bid on the Illinois or on that central Mississippi River. I think we're still going to be talking about a lot of processing of beans rather than the export market on beans.
Merrill Crowley, I know you follow the market closely from the technical side. What are the things that you find of interest this week in both the corn and soybean markets?
Corn, I see a pattern that could be gained from short to long if we can break over 682 on the beast corn. But then for beans, I think we might run into some resistance around 1471. If not there, then right around 15. We're already a little over 1450. I don't have quite a clear picture on the beans like I think I do on the corn. The other thing is I'm looking for, I had a cycle low due Tuesday of this week. It came Friday, I'm pretty sure. And then some type of four-year cycle low that's coming in October or maybe just a little later. So looking at that and trying to figure from what I might see the market do, I would think the market is just running a correction and we may see rains. There's some rains in the forecast. Whether they'll come to fruition or not, that's a million-dollar question. They have been spotty around here. You asked about the condition around here. They were spotty. We seem, I think, all in all, to have a good base. We might have some problems in pollination, but we'll have to wait to see till we can kind of get out and look at the fields, get a little more mature before we can decide that.
All right, I'd like to ask each of you, and Aaron and Ellen, I'll start with you and work from Scott back to Merrill on this question. In your areas or with the people that you talk to about marketing corn and soybean, the nice rally that we've had in the market since the lows have been put in, do these offer another opportunity for producers either to make catch-up sales or additional sales, and how far along do you think that they should be at this point? I guess, Ellen, I'll start with you today.
Well, I think it's going to depend on how much rain people have had over the last 10 days. Now, when you talk to Merrill and he's had 3 or 4 inches of rain, I would think I could push him to make some sales, particularly on the corn side of things, given that pollination's already taken place. But for the guy like in our area around Peoria, we've really only had a couple of tenths of an inch of rain, and that makes it difficult to push sales ahead there. I did notice just behind our farm the other day that the ear lengths are good, the kernel counts are good, but boy, we need moisture to fill out the kernels. So it depends on where people are. I think that this $14.80, $15 area on November beans could trigger some more selling, and I already on the bean side of things, at least on the hedge sales, up in the 50% range right now.
Aaron Curtis from Midco.
Yeah, from our elevator network that we talked to, right, it's been pretty much crickets the last couple of weeks, Todd. I mean, just not buying much, a little bit of old crop continuing to move out, but there's not much left for the farmer to sell on old crop. And you know, we base it on an average, you know, the farmer's 20 to 25% on new crop corn and soybeans. And I think he's going to stay that way here for a while, especially when he sees some of these weather maps for how hot it's going to get out west, and expect crop ratings to continue to deteriorate 1 to 2% a week. So, you know, until we get back, if we do, back to that 650, 675 area East corn, producer's going to stay pretty quiet. But if we do continue to rally here, look to get up in that, 30 to 35% sold here, moving into harvest, that would be the goal at this point.
Scott Kirkwood out in the Western High Plains.
The farmer, you know, has just totally disappeared from the marketplace. As I mentioned earlier, we have very little new crop corn yet to buy. You know, we bought a fairly good chunk, you know, in the run up there in February. But as the weather has deteriorated, the farmer has just ran to the sidelines, and he's just real reluctant on to sell anything just because of what his crop is going to be. The way the cash market could be out here, I really don't see a lot of risk in him stepping out and going selling corn, maybe until the middle part of September, something like that.
Merrill Crowley?
We're in the 30-40% range, looking at maybe make some more sales if we can get a little higher. I know several farmers are looking at $6 to try to make some more sales, and but with basis where it's at, it's going to take a little bit more. And that's something that kind of, I don't know, I wanted to ask the guys that usually work with the basis more than I do. You know, I'm looking at fall basis, and as I look around, most of these basis levels that I see are for normal crops. And so if we're looking for weather rallies here based off of the weather, what is keeping the commercials from pushing for tighter basis like they have where Scott is?
That's an Aaron Curtis question.
I agree. I also think it's a Scott Kirkwood question, because I don't think his basis is reflecting as bad a crop as they have there, frankly. So, Aaron, why don't you start?
Well, I think particularly in this part of the world, crop does look pretty good, right? And I don't think the elevator's in a big hurry to try to improve basis and try to give away any more margin than they want to give away at this point, assuming that we have somewhat of a of an average crop. We talked a little bit about some of the challenges the elevator industry is going to have here moving forward with every cost they have going up and limited carry on the board. So trying to give away some of the margin through improving basis is going to be a challenge right now. Now that may change, you know, as time goes on, but basis improvements here at the late July based on weather forecasts, I think, are typically not something you're going to see at this point.
And before, Scott, you answer, I have an additional part of that question I'd like to know about, because the USDA season's average cash prices, I'll remind you at this point, from the July numbers are $6.75 for corn. That's the cash price to the farmer, and $14.70 for soybeans. I think most farmers would like to have that average on the sales they already have on the books. I doubt that that's really the case. It means there's got to be a lot higher price somewhere, or USDA is going to have to come down. So let's turn back to you, Scott, and talk about the basis there and why at this point. And then maybe you can talk about these cash prices from USDA as well.
Sure. Well, to echo what Aaron said, you know, margins are, from the elevator standpoint, margins are extremely tight, costs are higher. So to really go out and push the basis more than we already have, I mean, we're really kind of stretching things pretty thin the way they are. The end user, you know, locally has not really stepped up with aggressive bids. I think they're inclined at this point to wait. I mean, and if they have to go pay it, they'll pay it then and not now. You know, in regards to the USDA numbers, yeah, maybe they are a little bit too high, especially with the way the crop is in the Eastern Corn Belt. You know, I think we'll definitely, in our area, I think we'll get there. We're not there yet, but we'll get there, I think.
Ellen Dearden, anything to add?
I don't believe USDA has a very good handle on that average farm gate price, but I would anticipate that they would drop it on this August 12th report.
Aaron, are you of that opinion as well?
Yeah, I think so, right? I don't think the funds look at what that price is, right, and compare what they're going to do on a daily basis. And I would expect most, based on what our supply-demand forecast was, seeing these futures go down to 575 was probably not in the cards for a lot of folks, right? So I would assume, depending on what they do with production here in August, I would assume that number could inch a little lower here over time.
Let's get a final word from each of you. Merrill Crowley, I will start with you from AgTraderTalk.com out of Watseka, Illinois. Any final word for the day?
I think we just have to keep pushing our pencils, seeing what's viable for our operation, and try to get sales made on this bounce.
Aaron Curtis from Midco in Bloomington, Illinois.
It feels like, maybe a little too early, but it feels like maybe we finally digested or at least diverted ourselves from the outside markets now that that Fed meeting's out of the way and focusing back on fundamentals. I would say short term, the weather looks friendly here, could offer some additional upside here. But like Merrill said, I think you got to continue to watch it pretty closely because weather markets are tough. So we can get back close to some of those higher levels in December corn, like we saw around that July crop report. I'd be watching that level pretty closely.
Ellen Dearden from Ag Review in Morton, Illinois, your final word for the day.
I think we need to keep in mind that from Friday's low to Thursday, today's high, we've already been up 60 cents in the D's corn. We've been up $1.58 in the November beans. I think these levels are something not to ignore, not to walk away from, and just figure that all's good. I might as well go on a camping trip.
And Scott Kirkwood at CHS High Plains, your final word for the day.
Thanks for having me and giving me the opportunity to tell you a little bit about our business unit and the agriculture out here in Northeast Colorado and Western Nebraska. But, you know, all I can say is, if you guys think you have any spare rain, please send it our way because because it is like Armageddon out here. You know, it's going to be definitely in our neck of the woods. It's going to be definitely a different market than what we've seen probably in that I've seen out here. So, if you have any extra rain, please send it our way.
Hey, and I'm going to follow up with you for just a moment on a couple of questions, and Ellen Dearden may want to jump in on this too, I guess. Are you seeing cattle move from Texas up to the yards there in Yuma or other places?
I have not.
We are not seeing Texas cattle move much further north than just Kansas. And Kansas is paying, I've heard some cash prices in Kansas that are more than $3.50 over the board for corn prices, and that I can't imagine trying to feed cattle at that situation.
Is there anything we need to think about out of that, Ellen, or is it just something that's happening?
Well, we've just decimated this cattle herd, and I think that's a long-term issue that's going to take a couple years to rectify. Adding numbers back, and that's just going to be the way it is. We've got probably high Fed prices coming and low situation on numbers, so not much corn demand there, or less corn demand.
Yeah, it was something USDA warned about last summer as related to the drought in the western United States.
Mm-hmm.
And the impact it would have. I think they were talking about 4 years out at that point.
Right.
But the exit of beef production in that area will have a demand effect, I suppose.
Yep.
Well, thank you all very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Todd. I appreciate it.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may hear the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org or just search us out in your favorite podcast application. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Merrill Crowley of AgTraderTalk.com from Watseka, Illinois, Aaron Curtis at Midco.com in Bloomington, Illinois, and Ellen Dearden of Ag Review in Morton, Illinois, as well as our special guest for the day, Scott Kirkwood at CHSHighPlains.com. He is in Eastern Colorado. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.